Chapter 13. Coruscant. The war raged on. Back in control of his portions of the Alliance military, and no longer distracted by Alana's absence, for secretly she accompanied him everywhere, smuggled between GA government buildings and the Anakin Solo in shuttles, guarded by only the most trusted officers and YVH-908, Kytus found himself stymied on some fronts, wildly successful on others. First, there was the Hapes situation. Tenel Ka did not immediately turn over her fleets to his control. Instead, she withdrew them to Hapes Consortium space and cut off all communication with the Galactic Alliance, and with the Confederation, with the world of Kashyyyk, and, as far as anyone could tell, with the Jedi. Kytus did not know quite what to make of this maneuver. Tenel Ka could have been killed by the explosion that allowed Kytus to escape her palace, or subsequently deposed, her successor choosing to return the consortium to a neutral position. Or Tenel Ka could be taking what she must see as a terrible chance with the life of her daughter. Either way, Kytus had still been able to turn the situation into a victory. By using his intelligence resources to suggest to Confederation analysts that Tenel Ka's non-aggression treaty with them was now void, Kytus ensured that the Confederation maintained resources to monitor and safeguard against possible Hapen attack, and that gave Kytus some breathing room. Soon enough, he could determine whether Tenel Ka still ruled the consortium, get in touch with her, and persuade her that Alana's life was forfeit if she did not cooperate fully. While waiting to reach Tenel Ka, Kytus concentrated on other things, such as the Jedi. They had been quite successful at going underground after the battle at Kuat, so much so that the only sign he had seen of their activity had been the futile attack on him a few days before. He dispatched Tahiri in her Stealth X to run down her own leads and sources, to find out where the Jedi had headquartered themselves. He had thought she could simply use her association with other Jedi to find out the information, but no. It appeared that Tenel Ka had managed to communicate her suspicions of Tahiri to the other Jedi at Kuat. Tahiri still had no answer for Kytus. It was a big galaxy, and she was, in his eyes, a stupid girl, and a needy one, constantly importuning him for new chances to flow-walk into the past and re-experience the wonders of Anakin Solo in the days and hours before his death. Kytus shook his head over that. He had seen so much of Anakin in recent months that he had come to despise the brat. The reasons why he had ever held the boy in any regard, why he had chosen to name his Star Destroyer for him, were now lost to Kytus. Meanwhile, the war raged on. With the Hapens back in play, the Alliance no longer had to worry about staging a fighting retreat. The balance of power was now once again slightly in the Alliance's favor. Kytus personally led new fleet operations at Kuat and on the outskirts of the Corellian system, commanding elements of the 5th and 2nd fleets, respectively. And his Sith battle meditation ability helped his forces inflict heavy losses in both theaters of operation. Commonor retaliated for the asteroid bombardment, and in savage fashion. The first sign of it was a statistical spike in the number of head colds among humans who had recently passed through Galactic City spaceport, civilians and military personnel alike. Within days, those head colds developed into raging fevers and dangerous dehydration, and the infection spread like Kashyyyk's forest fires through the ranks of the armed forces and lower social classes. Left untreated, the illness could kill. It was a Flissaria, caused by an airborne bacterium, the cure for which had been discovered a century before, with the illness pronounced extinct not long after. There were no stores of Afflisaria-specific antibiotics. There had been none needed in 100 years. Quantities were cultured and rapidly distributed to the military. There was not enough to protect the civilian population, and by the 3rd week of the outbreak, when the first doses began to filter into the civilian distribution network, the illness had reached epidemic proportions, causing massive personnel shortages in critical fabrication industries. Spies captured and interrogated by the guard confessed to being Kaminori and to spreading the bacteria. The Alliance-controlled portions of the Holonet howled with outrage. Civilian space traffic was severely curtailed as quarantine measures were put into effect. The war raged on. There were other annoyances. Kitus's subordinates reported that Dr. Seiya, failed spy of Centerpoint Station, had disappeared minutes before they moved in to arrest him. In subsequent days, no sign of him turned up, suggesting strongly that Kitus had been right to suspect him. He was obviously a double agent and had been rushed to safety by his Corellian masters. Alana was responding with less and less enthusiasm to her time with Kitus. He had to keep his frustration in check and wait for her to get over missing her mother. Perhaps it was time to work on her a bit, to diminish her affection for Tenel Ka by judiciously erasing some of her memories here and there. Some faint misgivings stayed his hand for the time being, but if the situation continued worsening, he would take that step. And the war raged on. Kashyyyk, Mitel Base, hangar housing the Millennium Falcon. Han eased the Falcon off the Durakrete roadway and into the shadow of her usual hangar. The ship, he knew, was covered in soot from the firefighting mission they had just concluded. No firebreak mission. This time they had gone in to rescue a unit of Wookiee firefighters who had been cut off by fire moving more rapidly than expected. He was sure the freighter was covered in soot, because Leia in the co-pilot seat certainly was, from head to foot, except for a goggle-shaped patch of pink around her eyes and a breather mask-shaped oval around her mouth. The Wookiees she had brought aboard were similarly discolored by and stank of smoke. As soon as the Falcon entered the hangar and Han's eyes adjusted to the deep shadow there, he and Leia spotted a new visitor. Parked in the bay next to the Falcon's was a long yacht with curved lines and a swirling sky-blue and green hull. Its exterior, too, was marred with patches of soot and burn, evidence of its own recent contribution to the firefighting mission. Han winced. "Do you suppose when Lando's back is turned we could get some Wookiee teenagers to vandalize her? Put graffiti all over her hull?" Leia's tone was more thoughtful.
"I thought Lando was stationed halfway across Kashyyyk."
"He was." Lando was nowhere in sight. Han and Leia had set the Falcon down, ushered the Wookiee firefighters off, and called in for routine refueling before Lando made his appearance. The boarding ramp of the Love Commander came down, and he stood at its top, clad in purple synth silk and a flowing velvet hip cloak in black. But it wasn't the same old Lando. His face was fixed, nearly emotionless, his complexion waxy. Leia didn't wait for him to descend. She started up the ramp toward him.
"Lando, what's wrong?"
"I have to go."
Lando managed 2 faltering steps down the ramp before Leia reached him. She held him there, steadied him on his feet, then turned and assisted him down the ramp. Han tried to keep his own voice steady, unperturbed, but Lando's appearance set off alarm bells in his head.
"What's going on, old buddy?"
At the bottom of the ramp, Lando reached into a tunic pocket.
He fetched forth a data card, which he looked at blankly for a moment before handing to Han.
That's everything you need for the Love Commander. Registration, annotated schematic, everything. Thought I'd donate her to the cause. Firefighting, side missions. You can sell her if you're ever strapped for credits.
Lando, what's wrong? By this point, Leia could no longer keep a sharp edge of worry out of her voice.
It's Tendra.
Leia paled, and Han felt a jolt of dread. Tendra had to be dying, or already dead, for Lando to be so affected. It wasn't fair. Lando had found his perfect match long after he had given up on the thought that he ever would, and so much of his and Tendra's life together had been interrupted by protracted crises, including the Yuuzhan Vong War. And now this. Lando was clearly struggling to continue.
She's going to have a baby.
Leia froze, staring up into his shocked features. What? What? A smile started to spread across her face. Han sagged in relief.
Is that all? You had us really scared there.
All? Is that all?
Lando put a hand on the yacht's hull to steady himself.
Fine, you can stop being scared. Not me. I'm too old to be a father. Emperor's black bones. I'm not ready.
Leia embraced him. Lando, there are two types of people in this universe. Those who think they're not ready to be parents, and those who are kidding themselves. Suddenly relieved of a crushing weight of worry, Han sagged. He bent over, putting his hands on his knees.
Buddy, the next time you scare me like that,
you'll shoot me? Do I have your word on that?
Lando, listen. Leia's voice was compelling. You and Tendra are going to be the parents every child dreams about. Rich, famous, dashing, and so scared of fouling up, you're going to spoil your child to death. Am I right? Lando considered. His expression was starting to return to normal.
How old does he have to be before I start him on Sabacc?
2. Han straightened up. And no wine appreciation training until he's at least 4.
Leia corrected him. She.
It's just, this is something I can't fix with charm, or a rigged game, or a holdout blaster.
Leia smiled up at him. You can't fix it, because it's not broken.
Yeah.
Lando took a deep breath, fortifying himself against the future.
I have to go. My transport home lifts off in 30 minutes. I was worried that I wouldn't get to see you at all before I left.
Han clapped him on the shoulder.
Well, your luck is holding out, old buddy.
Lando gave Leia a final squeeze, grabbed Han for a quick hug.
I want to know where you two are at all times, in case I have to holocom you for advice.
Just send your message to wherever the noise is the loudest. It'll be either us or Luke.
Right.
His walk once again jaunty, Lando headed for the main doors out of the hangar. He waved, giving them one last look over his shoulder, and took a final wistful glance at the Millennium Falcon. Then he was gone. Leia tucked herself under Han's arm, wrapping it around her shoulders. I am so jealous.
I'm not. Imagine trying to take care of a baby with this war going on.
Imagine having one thing, one innocent life to think about, to the exclusion of everything else, including the war.
Well, yeah, you have a point.
He wheeled her around toward the Falcon.
Come on, let's see if we can trick some big furry guys into washing the ship.
Aboard the Anakin Solo. It was good to be back home, and it surprised Kitus that he had truly begun to think of his ship that way. All through his life, home had been wherever he hung his robes at night, as his parents' missions and then his own missions and goals carried him from one end of the galaxy to the other. Now he could travel those same distances and still sleep in the same bunk each night. He could keep Alana with him, safe as she could be anywhere in the galaxy, in the hidden quarters so close to his official cabin. Having a familiar location wherever he went offered comforts that he had never experienced before, offered some small compensation for the loss of friendship he had experienced since embarking on his plan to restore order, and he found himself appreciating that fact. Of course, he could keep Alana even safer, and have even more comforts if he traveled in a bigger, more powerful, more heavily defended vessel, something suited to the Chief of State of the Galactic Alliance. He'd have to go to the drawing board and do a little preliminary designing. These were his thoughts as he stood on the Anakin Solo's bridge, looking out through the forward viewports in a rare moment of inactivity. Ahead and down relative to the ship's keel, he could see a Golan III Space Defense Nova gun, one of several space stations packed with shield generators and weapons guarding space above Coruscant. It was far enough away to be little more than an elongated blue triangle with tiny bumps and knobs all over it, like an odd-shaped blaster pistol aimed out into space. Also visible was the constant, soothing stream of vehicles and vessels entering or leaving Coruscant's atmosphere. Troop transports, freighters hauling military supplies, Holonews transports, naval interceptors ensuring that everything was as it should be.
Sir?
Kitus turned to face the speaker. Captain Kral Deuce Neville, a male Quarren with a distinguished record in starfighter operations, had, like many fellow pilots, made the transfer to naval operations and a command role when his cockpit skills had begun to diminish. Now he wore the blue naval uniform with the same professionalism with which he had worn the garish orange of the X-Wing pilot. But Kitus sometimes wondered if he brought the same enthusiasm to his role as the Anakin Solo's new captain. Kitus nodded, acknowledging that he had heard his captain.
"Admiral Neothel is coming up, sir, on her personal shuttle."
Really? Kitus considered that. Whatever news she brought had to be important enough that it couldn't wait for their next regularly scheduled meeting, nor could it be committed to the potential insecurity of holocom transmission.
"Make standard preparations for her arrival, and have security do a sweep of my conference room." "Yes, sir."
Neville saluted and withdrew.